I am in a plane to Berlin with a rock band whose name is
Buzzcocks,
and you're listening to W Radio Internet XM. This is the Buzzcocks.
Okay. You're listening to Melding Pod
with Annie from Marseille.
But you must say your name and the name of your band before.
Prisoner number 43281, Buzzcocks Tony. You listening to Melding Pod with Annie from Marseille.
Yes.
And we're on a plane, we've got to get off, so we've got to get our bags.
And you?
What?
Take me the same.
Oh, hello, you're listening to Melting Pot with Annie. W.79,000XFM.00945. My name's Steve Diggle. I'm wanted by the police, but have a good time. I'm just about to be arrested. They've got on a plane, they're going to get
Come
me.
Come on, son, you're nicked.
So, have a listen to Annie on Melting Pot.
Now I'm in Waitertat with...
I'm Lars from Pranksters, DK, listening to Melting Pot with Annie from Marseille.
Yes.
Rock on.
This is Pranksters, I'm Tim, playing bass. You're now listening to Melting Pot with Annie from Marseille.
Good morning, guten Tag, bonjour, welcome to Melting Pod, sound and colors from the planet Marseille today, September 3rd. We are with Texas Terry Bomb and her song, Never Shut Up.
Baby talks, yeah, baby talks, she's always got something to say, hey. Her mind's already been made and she can't be told. She called you on the telephone, she ain't gonna leave you alone, she don't.
Texas Terry is an American rock singer who worked many years with success in Los Angeles, where she became very famous, and I met her last year in Marseille at La Machine à Coudre, where she gave a live show, but we didn't find the time to record an interview, and knowing that she lives now since 2 years in Berlin, and being myself in this town last February, I propose a second meeting with her in the Cheeky Heart, a nice bar beside the Wild at Heart, my favorite punk rock club in Berlin. She accepted with pleasure, and I propose to you to listen to that interview now. I'll illustrate with songs from her album Your Lips, My Ass, with a lot of famous musicians who play with her, like right now Wayne Kramer from the MC5 and Sonny Vincent, later Mark Diamond from Motocross, Ryan Roxy from Alice Cooper, and Sherry Curry from Runaways, as well as a live extract from Marseille. Be ready for a 50-minute punk rock show.
Okay. Testing, 1, 2.
Today we are in Berlin, yep. And I am with
Texas Terry at the Tiki Heart.
And I'm very happy to see you again, because we already see each other in Marseille.
Yeah.
And we have no really luck to do a good interview, and I am trying to do a
second time this and I'll be with you.
Danke schön, Kaukideo.
And what is your name? Is Terry? Only Terry? How can I call you?
I have been called Texas Terry for 84, 94, 104, 25 years. So at this point, my name is Texas Terry. My birth name is Terry Laird. So Texas Terry Laird would be my full name at this point in my life.
I called you Texas Terry.
Yeah. Yes? Oh, you call me
yes.
Texas, if you like. Angelina Jolie called me Texas because we used to be friends.
Yeah.
In Texas, how and when did you start the music?
When I was a little kid, I was singing in front of the mirror, and I wanted to be a rock and roll star, and I'd be in my room fantasizing how wonderful that would be. And then by the time I was in my early 20s, I got in a band in Austin, Texas. But I always wanted to be an entertainer. And then so that's pretty much how it happened. I mean, I always liked the Rolling Stones, and the first memories of rock and roll I have are those like the cover of Nancy Sinatra's. My parents had her album, her vinyl album of These Boots Are Made for Walking, and I remember the picture on the front was just like so cool, and she was just so cool, and that was like in the 60s. And then I heard really got into the Rolling Stones 12x5 and the pictures of them on the front cover. They just look so sleazy and just so cool. So those would be my two. Because even before that, I was listening to rock and roll on the radio and everything. But I think that those are the two. You know, Nancy Sinatra with those white boots and the mini skirt and the 60s hairdo, and then the ratty looking yet glamorous seductive Rolling Stones. That's rock and roll to me.
Many people told you are the female Mick Jagger.
That's great. I'll go with that. I wish I was as successful as the female as the male Mick Jagger. I didn't really go as far in my rock and roll dreams as I had hoped. That's why I'm having a very difficult time. This is like a turning point for me this year, because I can't keep doing the same stuff. I worked my ass off trying to get more successful so that I could live off of being a performer. But I'm still struggling, and I'm weighing out whether it's worth the struggle anymore.
You were born in Texas, and then you moved to L.A.?
I lived in Austin, Texas, and then in 1984 I moved to Los Angeles. And that's where I had a band called the Killer Crows.
Your rock and roll life was in Los Angeles?
I've been having my rock and roll life since I was born. You know, it's always been a rock and roll life. I had a rock and roll life in Austin. I grew up during the hippie days. I grew up during the you know, Rocky Erickson and the 13th floor elevator days. I saw Rocky Erickson when I was like 13 years old at a party, and it was just blew me away that. I mean, that was like one of my first memories of seeing a band. It was Rocky Erickson, which is still one of my heroes. And I mean, I got to see so much good music in Austin. I mean, it was like there was a club called Antone's, and there was a blues club. So I got to see all the great blues players, and James Brown a million times, which he's one of my huge influences because he had so much energy, and you know, I got to see everybody. Muddy Waters, Willie Dixon, Bobby Bland, just all of the really great singers, and then the punk rock era came along. So, you know, anything that was like on the outsider, I was always a part of, because that's where I felt more comfortable. And then, as I said, in 1984, I moved to L.A., and then there was all the glam rock and the trash rock and the punk rock, and, I mean, it was a whole big city experience. And I got a lot done there. I did a lot of acting work and had my first band, The Killer Crows, and near the end of that, I got clean and sober, because I was a terrible drug addict and alcoholic, and I had my fun, you know, I had plenty of fun, but the day came where I had to quit everything or else die. So, you know, it was a sad day, because I still love drugs and alcohol, I just can't do them. So I had to say goodbye to that life, and then eventually I started another band. It took 3 years from quitting The Killer Crows for my mind to forget what a pain in the ass it is to be in a band. Because it's a complete pain in the ass. Having to find 3 other people to play in your band, and then dealing with all of these different personalities and trying to come up with the money to pay for this and to pay for that. And unfortunately, I was always the one that went kind of scrounged up most of the money to make things happen, because I was a little bit more resourceful. But, you know, you get tired of that shit. And but it took 3 years for me to forget. And then now I started back. Then I started back, and I haven't taken a break since, which is now...
His Majesty the Baby, lying on the floor, crying out for mercy for the woman he adores. Give me one more chance to bring it in with this queen. No way, you gotta pay, and I'm taking everything, and I'm not gonna be the one to ride with you into the setting sun.
That period where you ask your fans to record the music, your live shows, to make CD, because you have no luck, no desire to make your own CD, and you told your fans they can record the show and put that on.
When I got back, started back into the band, and then it was Texas Terry and Baby Bird, and then it was Texas Terry and the Stiff Ones, and then that's what became Texas Terry Bomb. But back in the Texas Terry, Baby Bird, early Stiff Ones days. Yeah, because that was one reason I don't like being in a band, is because it's so much work. And I always seem to be the one getting stuck with the work, because nobody else wants to do it, or they're too lazy, or they don't know how, or da-da-da, excuse. So when I started and my fans were asking for T-shirts and CDs, I'm like, sorry, I don't want to get involved in the business part. The business part of running a band makes me unhappy. So back at that point, I told them, just bring your cassette recorder and record the show and sell them at the next show. I don't give a fuck. If you need the music that bad. And if you want T-shirts, just spray paint something on a t-shirt and make your own, because I don't want to get involved. But eventually I caved in and started putting out music for them and making t-shirts, designing t-shirts, and I did all this myself. You know, I mean, I had to have the band there to record, because they always wanted to record. They all always want to do the fun part. But then I'm like, okay, well, now that you recorded, what are you going to do to put this out? I don't know. And unfortunately, I have one of those minds that if I know something's sitting there, I have to make something happen with it. And I'm cursed with that. I wish I could be the one in the band that just sits there. I don't know, somebody else can figure it out. You know. But I'm the one that keeps things rolling. And as you can see by the look on my face, I don't really like being the one to keep things rolling. But I suppose I'm just going to just say it. I must have leadership qualities, because I'm the only one in any of my bands or any lineup of any of my bands that are out doing music right now. So, you know, I don't know what to say. But, yeah, now I'm stuck with it. I'm in the middle of writing new songs for a new record.
Now you are doing yourself everything. You self-produce your own album, you make everything?
Well, there's a great thing about that, is when you're in charge, you get to make all the final decisions, because it's all my direction. I mean, this is now my direction. And finding people that fit in your direction, that's been my hardest challenge the last few years. But there may be hope for the future, because I may have somebody that is right in the vein of my direction now. So we'll see what happens. It should be interesting.
Her face was kissing my ass. She turned around, started talking trash. What's that scar in the corner of your arm? Notify the men at the funny farm. I'm gonna put it to you, put it to you, baby. Put it to you, put it to you, baby. What's his face was living real fast. Smoking crack out of a dick of glass. Skeleton bones for a coat of arms. Last week's news was his lucky charm. I'm gonna put it to you, baby. Put it to you, baby. She said I was the reason. She said
I saw you in Marseille.
Yeah.
It was new musician for you?
No. The guitar player and the bass player had been in the band for about, let's see, maybe a year and a half when you saw me, or maybe a little less than a year and a half. And the drummer had been in the band for almost a year. But now that guitar player left the band because he feels like he doesn't fit in to the, as he calls it, street punk thing, which I don't fit into the street punk thing either. I'm more of a rock and roll person. But that was the French guy.
but he's into a.
Yeah, what's his for you? It's interesting for me that you describe the difference between punk and rock, because punk is rock with energy and sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to call me punk rock and roll, that would be, in my opinion, correct, because back the type of music that I think my music is more derivative of is the early New York punk rock and roll scene. To me, that's punk rock. It's the sleazy punk rock, like Dead Boys and Iggy Pop and Ramones and my mind's a blank. But that, to me, that New York punk rock is really punk rock to me. Actually, I like Buzzcocks and Stranglers. And
I met Buzzcocks the last time I fly to Berlin in the plane.
Yeah?
Yes, and I didn't know them, and they were beside me in the chair. And I make not an interview where we say only stupidity on my microphone, but this was Buzzcocks.
Yeah, I love them. Yes. In fact, we're doing a festival in somewhere in the Czech Republic this summer, and I get to play on the day that they play because I requested to play on the day that they play. Because I know the, you know, I know them, but that should be fun. I mean, all since I haven't really been as successful as I have liked in the rock and roll world, I have to make my own rock and roll history. That's why when I went on tour in the U.S. in 2006. I had Cheetah Chrome from the Dead Boys was my guitar player playing my songs. And of course, then we did a couple of Dead Boys songs. But that was from my own rock and roll history. And for the people that showed up at the shows. Because, you know, it's just pretty great. And in New York City at the Continental, I had Andy Chernoff from the Dictators came up. And so I had Cheetah and Andy playing with me. And these are like rock and roll history moments to me. And whoever else gives a shit. But it's like this year I get to play with the Stranglers like a couple of weeks ago. And to me, that was like a show that was special to me. And getting to play with the Buzzcocks. You know, it's just I need these special things for me, too, to keep me going.
I am your main girl if you're looking for trouble. I take no lip cause no one's tougher than me. If I kicked your face, you'd soon be seeing double. Hey, little boy, keep your hands off me, cause I'm a rocker. Yeah, I'm a rocker. And I'm a roller too, baby.
You jaunt me on the bars, stomping, bibbing and bopping and telling a dirty joke or two. In walked this boy and I knew he was up to something. I kissed him right there, straight out of the blue.
I said, hey baby, meet me, I'm a tough girl. Got my Chrysler outside, you wanna try?
Lee just looked at me and rolled me them big eyes. She said, oh, I'd do anything for you.
Cause I'm a rocker! That's right, I'm a rocker! Baby, yeah, I'm a rocker. I love to rock and roll. I get my records from the rock and roll store. Sweet rock and roll. Teddy boy, he's got them all. Oh, 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 oh.
remember when this show at Marseille, I told you the last time after the show that I was very impressed by your way to sing, because you are looking in the eyes of each people in the audience almost.
Yeah.
You are really in contact with the people.
Yeah, that's what I do. I mean, I think I'm a very personable front person and very sincere and very honest, and I puke my guts out for my, not literally, I'm not Gigi Allen, but I pour my heart and soul and really connect with the people in the audience. I mean, when I'm in the audience, I love, that's why I love people like Mick Jagger and Iggy Pop, and I mean, they're fucking, they connect with their audience. I don't know if you've ever seen shows by them.
Yes, but they don't take the same risk like you, because they are not so close. You are very close.
Well, let me tell you something. They're playing at stadiums and big clubs. You know.
I just saw
it's
them
different.
in stadium. No chance.
But Iggy's always going out into the audience. Mick Jagger usually has that long runway so he can go to the audience, because if he jumped out in the audience, they'd probably rip him to shreds and take all of his clothes, and, you know, some of those girls would probably have a heart attack. Oh, my God, you know, he'd come back on stage naked, which would be fine for us, but, you know, he gets as close to the audience as he possibly can, but he doesn't need to be, you don't need to be that close to make that connection with people, because even when I'm on stages like that, never as big as the ones they do, but you know, I've been on some big stages, it's still easy to just connect with people all the way to the back.
I mean, for you, I have a question from a woman to a woman. Have you lived some difficulties to be a front woman on the stage, to have the connection with the people? Didn't think you take a risk, because the people are excited, they want, like you say, with Mick Jagger, to put the clothes off, and when you try this connection very close, can you install a respect between you and the audience, or how you can control that?
You have to take a risk always. Or as they say in German, Emma. You have to take a risk. I mean, I only hope that my fans respect me, you know, because I'll still kick them in the fucking face if they fuck with me. Because it's like, I've been doing this way too long to put up with any shit. I would be a lot further along if I was a male, because I think that a lot of people are get really scared of a chick that seems crazy. And if having the balls to express my express myself in an honest, eye-to-eye way is scary and crazy, I think it's sincere, honest, and very special to connect with my audience that way.
You know, I have a memory in Marseille when you sang I Want to Be Your Dog.
Yeah.
And you are very seducing and try to connect the eyes, and suddenly you say, I want to kill you. So all the audience,
Why, did someone fuck with me?
Yeah, because it was really impressed.
Someone must have fucked with me then, if I said that. I am who I am, and I've just always been very honest and sincere with my performances. But I think if I was a male, I would have gotten a lot further along, because then I would have that reckless behavior of Jim Morrison and Iggy Pop, and you know, a male's reckless energy and behavior is a lot more acceptable in society than a female's reckless, you know, dangerous behavior.
And I'll tell you why. Because men understand men, and that they're still, oh well, just because that guy acts reckless and dangerous, he's still safe because I understand him as a man. And all the women in the business want to fuck the entertainers, the male entertainers that are reckless, because they have their maternal instincts, where a reckless, wild, sincere, animal-like creature that's a female, they're terrified, intrigued, yet terrified, which some of my fans are too, but most of my fans are just like, they just connect with me and we feed each other like fucking animal connection, human connection, and live through each other forever just from one show. I mean, I look at pictures of the way people are looking at me, and the way they're looking at me, like I've changed their life. I've done my job. I mean, that's what I live for. Anybody else that doesn't understand me, they can fuck off. I don't give a fuck. I've been around too long to really take care of everyone else's feelings. I'm writing a song, and some of the lyrics are, you can love me, or you can love me, hate me, but you can't escape me. Because you're either going to love me or you're going to hate me. You're not going to just go, oh, she was okay. You're either going to go, oh, fuck, or you're going to go, I loved her, or, oh, fuck that bitch, you know? I mean, it's a very strong emotion that I bring up in people.
Why did you choose Berlin? Because we are in Berlin today.
Because I couldn't afford to live in Stockholm. That's the truth. I wanted to move to Stockholm, Sweden. That's where my heart is. I moved to Berlin. That was my second choice, Berlin. Because I knew more people here. And it's difficult to move to a different city in your same country, much less a different country. You know, you need to know some people where you are. When I moved from Austin to L.A., I knew one person, and it took forever for me to figure things out, because I didn't know anything about that city, and it's a big city, and, you know, people in big cities, they just don't, unless they know you, or know you, or a friend of a friend, then they're like, oh yeah, come on, let's go out, da 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 da. Took me like a year to get started in LA, and I knew that it was going to be difficult to move to a different country, different language. I have to get a visa, lots of research how to get this and how to do this, and I mean, it's a lot of work. So that's why I decided Berlin.
I know you speak in German.
Ein bisschen. Yeah. A little bit.
And you find very quickly the White Hart as a good
played here before. Mm-hmm. I've been here like two or three times to play. So, you know, and I'd become good friends with Leah and Uli. And I had come back here to visit because I wanted to make sure I wanted to move here. Because, you know, sometimes when you're on tour and everything, it's like all of these cities, you're only there for a day. So you're like, oh, I'm going to move there. But you know how it is. Moving to a place is different than visiting for a week or so. So I came back here a couple of different times. Once for like 2 weeks to see how I liked it. And then 6 months later, I came back for 6 weeks. And then I decided, okay, I could now, because it really took more like 6 weeks, so I could just hang out and see what it would feel like for a day-to-day life here. And then I went home for like, back to the U.S. for like 2 months. And told everyone here, because they're like, when are you moving? And I said, I'll be back March 1st. And they're like, okay. And then when I got back to Berlin, it was March 1st, 2007. Now it's almost 2 years.
And I start my podcast March 1st, 2005.
What? You did what?
I start my podcast March 1st, 2005.
All right. Well, happy anniversary. Four-year anniversary.
Yes.
Coming up. That's nice.
We have to mark something together.
Ah, we got the Ides of March. Or that's the 15th, I think. But March 1st, it's very cool. It's a good day for starting a new project.
Yes.
Yeah. I got a hit. I'm taking everything that I can get. One hit. Wonder. I'm a one hit. Wonder.
Explain me a little your new project right now.
I got a lot of interesting things happening. These people, this fan of mine who also promoted a show of mine in Finland, she now lives in Sweden, but so she came to my last show there and proposed that she wanted to make a documentary on me. That's like the hardest working chick in rock and roll. And last night I met with this guy that's going to help her. That's here because he makes movies, he directs movies. and he's here in Berlin for the, what's it, the Berlinale, the film festival that's going on here. So we hooked up and talked about this documentary thing, and so that's going to take a lot of work, getting the material together and the ideas and all of this stuff. And seeing how I don't have any jobs here in Berlin, and I don't want to work in a bar, because I just don't need to. I don't want to. I'm trying to make enough money to by living off music. So, I started booking, because I'm in between booking agents now. So I'm booking my own shows because I'm making these connections with different parts of the continent, different areas. I'm just having people book. Spain will book Spain.
Who is money from Teenage Head Music for you? Is your
he's
manager?
Not my booking agent anymore. No, we don't work together anymore.
Oh, no.
No. Not for now. No. Because I have to try some other things. But, you know, when we worked together, it was fine. Up to a point, it was good. But now I have to see if I can make some things happen bigger for myself.
You want to do everything. It means
do not want to book the shows. At the moment, I am booking the shows because I'm making networking with different, like, I have a promoter in the Czech Republic that totally loves Texas Terry and totally wants to help me get bigger and bigger and bigger and more successful. So she's handling the Czech Republic for me. I will find people that totally love and believe in me. I have someone in Finland that is in the business world of booking that totally loves me and wants me to succeed. I have someone in Sweden who's going to take care of Norway and Sweden that totally loves me, and they make it fun again.
You go where is love.
Yes. So I'm having to start over because I have to do what's best for Texas Terry and the people that are working with me. They have their own lives. They need to do their own business thing. But if they're not going to be 100% behind Texas Terry, I have to not work with them. Because I need to have fun again. I need to go out and play shows that will inspire me to continue. Because I don't want to continue the way it's been the last year. I can't. I'm a political prisoner of people in the music business's politics. And I don't want to be a political prisoner of their politics. So I need to, because they hold me back. If I request something and they say they can't get it for me, and then I can get it for myself, I have to have it.
And I have a question, a little simple, but you spoke about politics. What do you think about this Obama election in the United States?
Killer. I think it's just like a miracle. I was so proud of the American people for pulling their heads out of their ass and actually standing up for huge change. And it's just overwhelming that it, I keep pinching myself that, you know, it's still a dream, but I think it's fantastic. And I think the whole world, because, you know, we were on tour when the election took place, but I was in Vienna, Austria when I woke up Because, you know, there's that time difference. And I woke up and I'm like, shit, who won? So I go out and there's another American band there that morning. And I'm like, who won? They're like, Obama by a whole lot. And I'm just like, oh, yeah. I'm like going nuts. It was just so killer for days. And just everybody, every town we went to, they're like, oh, your election's so great. They're all patting me. We're all like hugging. Oh, yeah, it's killer. And in Paris, in one of these storefront windows, there was a mannequin that had a I Heart Obama t-shirt, and I took a picture of it for my mother back in Texas, because she totally loves Obama. And
it was you're saying it's a new future for the United States, because
for the world.
For everybody, we think is completely good for us that Bush is away, but yeah. Maybe there is too much pressure of the shoulder of that man. It can change everything.
No, he can't. I mean, if he even, but you got to take into consideration, every politician has a whole list, a game plan that they would like to put into action, but they can't possibly get the whole plan done, especially only in 4 years. If he can even, I mean, he does have a tremendous amount of pressure on his shoulders, but if he can even take the mess that the last 8 years have been and even turn it to a different direction and get these things started, that would be enough for me, because at least it'll point it in a different direction of hope. This is Texas Terry, and you're listening to Melting Pot. I'm sitting here in Berlin with Annie. Annie's from... Why, this is getting too long. This is Texas Terry, and you're listening to Melting Pot with Annie from Marseille. So listen up, baby.
The end of that show with the Volcanic Texas Terry Bomb. I hope you will like it. You can react with your comments on MeltingPod, www.meltingpod.com. If you really love, you can financially support the podcast with sending money through PayPal on my blog, like my friend Tom did today. Thanks to you, this podcast is for you, as well for Mick Cox, Rostatu guitarist, who needs a lot of energy right now. You know, Mick, that nobody in Europe forgot you. Bye, tschüss, au revoir, à la prochaine fois, and stay connected with Melting Pod.
We didn't need a lot of money.